Welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate. Now, since the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic, we've tried to cover two major events. One is the pandemic itself, including what's happening to Black people, other people of color, and all marginalized communities. So, at the back end of today's show, I'm going to bring to you a conversation with Owen Higgins, a senior editor at Common Dreams, on the impact of COVID-19 on Native American communities. The other thing people need to think about and learn about is the fact that an American fascism is here and advancing. There has been no let-up in the assault on the rule of law and democratic rights and the hammering together of a fascist form of rule. So opening the show up, I'm bringing you two talks given late last year by Andy Z, a co-initiator of RefuseFascism.org and a member of the National Revolution Tour. And all of this underlines the need to check out the Get Organized for an Actual Revolution Tour yourself. Now let's hear Andy Z.
The fascist regime, in terms of their programs, does all the things that Sansara just talked about. But I have heard, or I have read New York Times editorial that lists all those same things. I have heard Bernie Sanders talk about many of those things, but not all. There are people who are going to D.C. next week to put pressure on the Republican senators. I think we should actually be down there too if we can figure out how to do this. But why? What is the difference with what we are advocating, and when we say it's the only way that we can remove this entire regime, and what it's going to mean for the masses of people of the world, the people of the Middle East, who are going to suffer immeasurably, that's already started. Not to mention the people in the concentration camps, and we haven't actually talked about that this is a program also for a faster genocide against Black people in this country. Let's be clear that that is very much in Trump's sights. But the essence of this, and what is already going on, and in a way that you don't see day to day, is the change in the form of rule of this country. And as a revolutionary and a revolutionary communist, I don't have much use for the form of rule in this country, no matter what. But if you are somebody who believes in the democratic process such as it's been in this country, or you think that that democratic process could be reformed in a way that it would work in the interest of the masses of people, you have to confront this. That what is going to happen, and what is already happening, is the taking away of the process now where a legislature is an independent body that in some ways is representative of the will of the people. What is being taken away is the separation of power between the judiciary, the courts, and the laws as it is. The rule of law is being replaced by the rule of the dictates of the executive branch, the president, the fascist in charge. That's what you even see in this attack in Iraq yesterday against a leader of Iran. Yeah. It's the violation of the rule. That's what in a democracy arguing process. It's so boring to listen to them sometimes. But what they are actually arguing that has half a point, more than half a point, is that they didn't consult with Congress. He just went and broke international law, committed a war crime, and now deal with it. That's what he's done his entire
life, really.
Life and his entire regime. So I think we should support, it's fine that people are going down to Congress to try to pressure the Republicans to vote for impeachment. But they are missing the boat, okay? They are missing the boat. That isn't going to actually solve the problem that we're facing. We're facing fascism. Once that does get consolidated, it don't matter what you think or what you want, because we have had a police state in many ways, especially for the oppressed communities, but for the majority of Americans, it's not. That's officer friendly out there. Okay? That's what it's been. Drive by while white and go a little too fast and be nice to the officer and you might get away with it. Drive according to the law when you're Black and you don't get away with it. It's by the whim of what he does. But this now becomes the law. You see, it's a different form of rule, and that's where you don't have a choice anymore. And that's where it becomes too late, where they can, and here's the danger of the Iran thing. if there is a sharper conflagration, and even if it comes to hitting Americans, and especially American civilians, then you can declare a state of emergency and martial law. How do you think fascism comes into place anyplace else?
That's right.
This isn't a curse word coming from us. This isn't the worst thing we can say. Well, there's racist, patriarchal, xenophobe, but man, fascism, that really nails it because it's worse than the others. It's actually a form in which this ruling class could rule over the masses of people here in the world and be ruthless. So when you talk about the blue wave, it's also true. Somebody made the point that you might not have had an impeachment had there not been more Democrats elected. There's some truth to that.
Yeah,
of
yeah,
course there's
really
truth
good.
To that. If they'd been in the minority, they couldn't have won it. But two things have to be said about that. Secondarily, the blue wave was won by electing very right-wing Democrats.
Yes.
The progressive Democrats, like AOC, only replaced other progressive Democrats who were a little bit to the right of them. But the actual blue wave was by putting in power, in contesting in conservative districts, by putting in people who, the number one qualification is that you're in the military, number two that you were in the SEALs, and number three that you love the CIA. That's who these people were who actually got in there. And that's why they waver all the time and there's worry about keeping the Democratic caucus in power. Intact. But that's not going to hold up in a situation where national security is in jeopardy. I'm going into this in some depth now because we have to understand, while we should go down to Washington, D.C. and other places and unite with people who are trying to put pressure on Republican senators, but as a strategy, it's dead wrong and it's dangerous. The reason why I really agree with what Vanessa said, it's 2020 could be too late, not because there might not be still room for struggle later on. We don't know. That's the key thing. But when that window closes, then it's closed.
Yeah.
That's the history of fascism, okay? And it usually comes to power by election. I've told this story before, but there's some new people here. When we first started this, I spoke at some kind of cocktail party or whatever the hell it was to raise money for Refuse Fascism. There's about 40 or 50 people there, well-heeled, intellectual, smart people. There was about 40 people there, 39 people disagreed with me. And the one person who agreed with me didn't say anything until it was all over and she stayed behind, and a middle-class woman, and she came up to me and she said, "I'm from Turkey. And what these people said here today, my friend said to me in Turkey, they said I was just self-involved." Turned out she was one of the most famous novels in Turkey. I didn't learn that until after she gave me the book, and then since Tara went and read it, we found out who she was, and oh my God, why didn't I get her number? Because I'll tell you one reason I didn't get her number is because she says, "I sleep in a different bed every night now." You see, she was saying that things can change. Turkey was a democracy. It was let into NATO. I'm not a big fan of NATO, but you get my point, right? See, things then changed at a certain point. I don't want to walk through the whole history, but at a certain point having to do with a coup, Erdogan, who is the head of Turkey, slammed that window shut. 120,000 people arrested overnight. Congress purged, courts purged. This can happen. Don't think it can't happen in America. Of course it's not what's happened over the last 240 years, but it doesn't mean it can't happen just because it hasn't happened. Not in a country founded on slavery and the genocide of the native people. Not in a country that's gone and attacked countries almost every year since its foundation. And over just in everybody's lifetime here, including the younger people here, it has invaded or staged a coup. But of course it could happen here. And it is what's happening. So we say it's fascism. And I'm going on about this because it's very important we have a different program. Our program is that the only way you can stop this regime and the full fascist force that's behind it is by creating a political crisis of masses and masses of people in the streets saying, "We don't accept this." See, these other programs can be a part of that. That's why I've said, there should be Bernie supporters up on the dais or the podium in front of us. And they can be, we stood with Cornel West. He's a surrogate for Bernie Sanders, for God's sake. But he recognized and spoke to it very eloquently. You can see the video on refusefascism.org that absent a mass struggle from below, if Bernie gets in, he'd be lucky to survive. I'll be honest with you. This is a fascist movement numbering in the millions of people and very powerful people in the military and in the security forces behind them. There's a, you see, society is already clean. This is another point that Baba Vakin people mentioned and said. It's not that Trump is creating divisions. He's taking advantage of those divisions and widening them for what? A different form of rule because they feel threatened here and around the world. So I wanted to really bring this home because we are going to have to get out there and struggle with people, including struggle with ourselves. And I'm trying to struggle with some people here today who are whose heart's in the right place, who want to act against this, who really hate what's going on, and who, yes, have different philosophies and political perspectives and objectives than some of us who are revolutionaries have. But all of us together do have to recognize that fascism is a distinct form of rule. Mm. It has consequences, and it can't be recovered from very easily, and in fact, historically, it's never been quickly recovered from without an external force liberating it from the outside. It's true that Pinochet eventually was removed from Chile, but that was after a long historical period. And this is what we actually have to reckon with, because we have a different program that can put its arms around people who are part of the electoral process, people who want to put pressure on the senators or the congresspeople to do better. We should put our arms around that. That's not the dividing line of this. It's not vote or don't vote or be a Democrat or be a revolutionary or be an anarchist or be whatever. But it is, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. Not a curse word, but a specific form of rule that, should it succeed, wipes everything else out. That's not alarmist. That's factual. One other thing, on our editorial board, I thought this was really a beautiful metaphor that really struck me the other day. Sarah Rourke, who's actually at this point is an expatriate, she writes from New Zealand, but she was just here for a couple of months or so, or a month or so. But she wrote yesterday, you know, a lot of people right now are feeling like this is really bad, but it's livable. I'm living my life, I'm going to go to Washington and protest and all that. She said, but you don't understand, this is like a flower that's been cut. And you put it on a vase on your table. It's still beautiful, it still smells good, but it's dying. It's already dead. The democracy that you think you've had, you don't have it anymore. You have it to some extent. It's not been, fascism has not been consolidated. We wouldn't be standing here. We'd be like downstairs someplace, and you would have had to go through some motions, some changes to actually get to the meeting. We don't want to get there. But we do have to recognize that that's what's in the offing. And if we don't understand that, at least in a basic sense, that's the urgency that causes us to be crazy enough to go out to people and say, look, you don't know what the hell is going on here. We've really got to build a different kind of movement. Mm-hmm. Not forget your movement, not forget your local activity, not to forget your environmental activity, but we have to get in the streets and stay in the streets until this is gone. Because until it's gone, we got a world of hurt. Last thing is the point that we've made several times in Refuse Fascism, which is the point that Steve King, the reactionary fascist lunatic from the state of Iowa, has said, when he said, "We have our side has 8 trillion bullets, while your side debates what bathroom to go to."
Yeah.
Now that's, we are for transgender rights, just to be clear on this, and we'll defend them and should be on the front lines of that struggle. But his point is that it's not just electoral here. It's not just electoral. There's literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people who are armed and arming for a conflagration. That is another reason why only masses of people who see what this regime, for all the reasons that Sansara said, all the terrible things they're doing, but they are changing the rules of the game because they are a minority who are going to force that over a majority. Study Israel, study South Africa, and see that minorities can rule a majority and create a reign of terror that forces that. And what happens, and unfortunately it's happening here, is that majority goes along with it very peacefully. Because they get the message. That's what it means to say the German people were good Germans, and we should not be good Americans in that sense. So that's, I really wanted to bring this in because this is what we're confronting now. A different situation where it's not that nobody's in the street, but people are in the street with lots of different programs. And we have to learn how to struggle with them and put our arms around them at the same time. And that's a more complicated situation.
That was Andy Z on the qualitative leap to fascism and the urgency to drive the Trump-Pence regime from power. We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back, so stay tuned.
This track is not an attack upon the American people. It's an attack upon the system within which they live. Since 1945, the United States has attempted to overthrow more than 50 foreign governments. In the process, the US has caused the end of life for several million people and condemned many millions more to a life of agony and despair. The strength of your dreaming prevents you from reason. The American dream only makes sense if you're sleeping. It's just a cruel fantasy. Their politics took my voice away, but their music gave it back to me. The land where they're lumping are consumed by consumption, killing themselves to shovel down food in abundance. I guess a rapper from Britain is a rare voice. America is capitalism on steroids. Natives kept in casinos and reservations. Displaced slaves never given reparations. Take everything from Native Americans and wonder why I call it the racist experiment. Afraid of your melanin, the same as it's ever been. That ain't gonna change with the race of the president. I see imperialism under your skin tone. You could call it Christopher Columbus syndrome.
Is it Obama's nation or an abomination? Is it Obama's nation or an abomination? Is it Obama's nation or an abomination?
Okay, that was Abomination by Low Key. Now we're going to hear more from Andy Z. This is how to struggle with people to get into the street to drive out the Trump and Pence regime.
All right, thank you, Carl. I just want to point out that Carl is also a co-initiator of Refuse Fascism. We're going to be sending you all out here today with a new flyer. And I just want to read the beginning of this flyer. It says, join the Out Now movement. The Trump-Pence regime must go now. Everyone with a conscience and a heart for the people and the planet must confront that every day the Trump-Pence regime remains in power, threatens the future. We must face this hard truth, but that is not enough. We must act on it. And there is a way to remove this regime. The whole regime, the Out Now movement, is calling for sustained, nonviolent protest that begins week after week and goes to day after day, where we're putting something on the line because it matters, the future depends on it, and now is the time when this must begin. We're calling for a month of activity in the month of January to once again try to get this movement going in this country. And I see that the fog has lifted a bit today, but the fog has not lifted over the people of this country, who continue to believe that they can ignore what is happening right before our faces. Look, it doesn't matter how much you hate Donald Trump. What really matters is how much you've accepted him. And it does matter if you come out and you act to drive this regime out. It will matter if you come out on Tuesday, the night before the impeachment vote in the House. But the question will be, come out to do what? Are you coming out as the leaders of this movement that's going to be in the streets on Tuesday night saying, well, we're going to go through impeachment, but then that'll be over, and what we really have to do is get ready for 2020. This is whistling past a political graveyard. By the time that election comes around, we could be in a whole different situation where even the ability to vote somebody out of office like Donald Trump may be taken away, and he has told you that he may not leave office. It's a joke. That's not funny, because these people really are bringing a different form of rule to this country, and if you don't believe it, you need to do some work. and go to the website refusefascism.org and see what they have already done and where their program leads. So there are some questions that we have to ask ourselves. I'm sure everybody here is saying, who stopped to listen and is thinking about, man, I'm really glad somebody's out here saying Trump, Pence out now, but where are all the people? Well, if there aren't more people, we can't do this. And that's true. But you have to ask yourself, what kind of people are we? If we don't move now, heaven and earth, when the architecture of fascism is being put in place, as the sister, the professor from North Carolina just brought forth, in the analogy to Germany in the early 30s. What will you do? What will we do? What do we need to do when so many people are standing aside from the tremendous crimes that are happening right now under our noses? When people turn away, a reporter here asked me, well, why are people turning away? Well, fundamentally, it's because at this point, it hasn't affected them. Why? Well, one reason is because this country sits on the top of the food chain. Many people are in despair and anguish, but it hasn't hit them. But it has hit. It has hit millions of people who are fleeing countries destroyed by the U.S. It has hit them. There are detention camps on your border. Children are being separated from their parents. Children and families are being kept in cages. People are dying on the border, and even more than that, right now. The Trump-Pence regime has taken measures that may make it impossible to actually reverse what is happening to the climate that will cause even more devastation and destruction and may even destroy life as we know it on this planet. And here I want to take a moment just to say to those youth,
they didn't know the room was too big because they didn't have any,
who are protesting around climate change.
How are they going to beat ISIS?
My heart was really moved when they took the stage. They rushed the stage after Greta spoke and they said, we are unstoppable. Another world is possible. But I want to say to those youth two things. Don't lose that spirit. Actually, I want to say three things. Don't lose that spirit, number one. Number two, you have to recognize that everything you are fighting for to protect the planet stands in jeopardy when the most powerful economic and military power in the world is retreating from doing anything about this, and that if it succeeds in consolidating fascism, then all bets are off for the planet. So because you are fighting for climate change, you need to say and be part of Out Now. And I want to say one more thing to these youth. Another world is possible, but it is not possible without a revolution. As the sister before spoke, Luan from the Revolution Club. Now that is not the unity necessary to be part of the Out Now movement, but it does have to be said that this is not a matter of the greed of the oil companies and the complacency of the people in power. This is an imperative, a necessity of the system itself to continually go in its dog-eat-dog way to rapaciously devour the planet and its people, and we need a whole different system that she spoke about before. But I want to say again to the youth, do not lose that spirit and bring that spirit into the movement to drive the Trump-Pence regime out, and do not stop.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
What will you do, and what will we do, when white supremacy sits in the White House and in every branch of government? Is it okay for you to sit at home because you're not black or brown or Asian or South Asian? Is that okay?
No.
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 What was the meaning of never again after the Holocaust? Never again should this happen to me, or is it never again should this happen to anyone?
Anyone.
Well, that this is still a problem is manifest in two ways right now. One, how few people are out here. So the question for all of us who are out here is, are we going to go put this in people's faces?
Yeah.
Turn their faces around.
Yeah.
And then, yes, we can sit down and explain. But it is not acceptable to say the people are all screwed up which they are right now. They're acting like ostriches with their heads in the sand about what we're really facing. It's not okay to just recognize that. We have to go struggle for them. Because there's another part of these people in that they hate this. They're in anguish. Even somebody I have some differences with who writes for the New York Times, Michelle Goldberg, has a cold op-ed in the New York Times today about the amount of mental despair that she and others feel. And I was reading a letter to Revolution Books today that spoke of a workshop among black youth where they couldn't even speak of what they face because of the abuse every day and the threat and the terror of living under a white supremacist regime. When people look back at this moment, will they say that the people who were sickened by what is happening put their hope in the leadership of the Democratic Party that passed articles of impeachment that were limited to a foreign policy scandal and which, yes, did actually undermine the legitimacy such as it exists of the electoral system, although the sister who spoke earlier spoke about how this system is also rigged in many ways in excluding people of color. But will they say that's all they did and then they went into the trial and gave up before it started? They've told you he's not going to be removed from office. They've told you that they're not going to do anything about it. They've told you all of this. But what are we going to do about that? Are we going to get out in the streets and prepare people for the kind of struggle that is necessary? That's what has to be done. That's what we're calling for. Now, I know some of you are thinking, man, we did this in November, and there's not that many people out today, and that's not just attributable to the rain. Okay, it's going to be even colder and rainier and snowier and icier and all that kind of stuff in January. But people have fought for change all over the world in bad weather. And bad weather is nothing compared to the crimes that are being cooked up and being prosecuted by this regime. And so we better harden up and get out into these streets and struggle with other people to get out into the streets, because there's no other way to drive this regime out. I want to say another thing about this impeachment. The very day that they passed in the Judiciary Committee the articles of impeachment, as weak as they were, Nancy Pelosi marches to the podium and says, we've reached across the aisle to strike a deal with the Democrats, with the Republican fascists. We're going to work with Donald Trump on a new version of NAFTA, and even worse, on the NDAA, the authorization of tremendous military oppression reigned on the people of the world, having agreed to, yes, the Democrats agreed to strip out every provision that wouldn't somehow safeguard some people, such as ending the war in Yemen. So they've told you right from the beginning that they are not going to do this, and yet you're still out there saying, well, I guess I'll just enjoy my holidays, which you should, but you should enjoy it talking to relatives and friends about what we really face and preparing them for struggle. I'm going on a bit here, more than I intended to, because the people who are here need to become an active force to change things. And who we have to change most of all are the people who do anguish over this, who are opposed to this, but are not doing what's needed to be done. I have a word to say now to the Bernie people. At another time, we can get into why I think Bernie, in dividing the spoils that the U.S. gets from around the world among the American people more fairly, is not the answer. But that's not what I want to talk to you about right now. I want to talk to you about your looking past, again, the graveyard that will be fascism. Bernie, Elizabeth, and not a single candidate for president will even utter the word fascism. They won't even say the word. And why not? Because if you say that word, then you're starting to realize what needs to be done. You can look at history and you can look at the present life we're living right now, and you will know that this is not going to go away without a fight. What we're calling for in sustained nonviolent protests in the movement for Out Now is not easy. It is not going to be without sacrifice. On some level, people know that. But you tell me when any regime like this has ever been dislodged without sacrifice. Don't go cheering for the people in Hong Kong if you're not prepared to go through what they're going through. Don't go flashing pictures on your Twitter of Iraq, Santiago, countries all around the world where people are taking to the streets. You think nobody's facing any prison or danger? How many people have been swept up? This is not a joke. This is fascism. Fascism growing around the world, and there's a longer explanation for why that's the case. But we have to face this. I'm not trying to give you a rah-rah speech here, obviously. Obviously. But I am trying to talk to you straight about what needs to be done. And it shouldn't. You can tell I'm infuriated. I'm infuriated at the people who aren't here. But what do you do with that? Well, you can get a pillow and punch it. When I was younger, I had a young kid, and we had this thing that you could go, this punching bag, and it would flop back and forth, and if you got angry, you'd say, go hit that for a way. There's several groups, and not enough, who are fighting to remove the Trump-Pence regime. I want to say why. I want to say a word to all of them and why we developed the Out Now movement. Because wherever you're coming from to oppose this regime, whatever ever effect of this regime that you are fighting against, whether it be immigration, the climate, racism, misogyny, the right to abortion, none of that goes forward unless this whole regime is removed. But we need to say to all these movements that Out Now is not anybody's property. We are determined and refuse fascism. And those who, like myself, are revolutionaries who helped initiate refuse fascism, we are determined to stand behind our slogan, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America.
That's right!
Yeah.
But we are also determined that everybody should be in this movement from whatever political belief you have, as long as you unite with that one single demand that Trump and Pence and that whole regime must be out now. So bring your own signs, bring your own things. This is not, oh, I'm going to lose my integrity with my group. Keep your integrity and grow your group. I don't care.
Right.
What has to happen is this regime has to be removed.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, January. Maybe this will be the last thing I want to say. In January, we have to be getting our forces together. Between now and January, Sansara and others will tell you about how we're going to do work over the next period, between now and New Year's. But on January 4th, we need everybody to come together in some mass meetings to discuss how we're going to drive this thing out. We have to get into it deeply, and we have to plan. And then the next weekend, which will be in the middle of the trial of Donald Trump in the Senate, there have to be people in the streets. The following weekend is Martin Luther King weekend. We need to be in the streets. The Women's March is called for a march on the Saturday of that. We should be going there. But to do what? They have said, we're going into that march to go against any senators who vote to acquit Donald Trump. But actually, their program is to elect more Democrats. Well, they can do that. But that's not going to drive out the regime. So we have to go into that protest and put forward this demand and this strategy. And then the following Saturday, on the 25th, we need to build these demonstrations so that there's not just 60 or 70 people or ever many who are here, but hundreds of people in the streets, and that we get this going with the kind of momentum that grows from hundreds to thousands to tens of thousands and millions of people, learning from the example that people have done all around the world. So with that, I want you to join me in saying, aha, I don't have the pledge in front of me, but that together, join me, I'm going to make up a new pledge, unless, okay, together, this is a mic check, okay? Together, we have to overcome
fear and uncertainty.
and act with determination.
And act with determination.
To drive out.
The
Trump-Pence regime.
The Trump-Pence regime.
In the name of humanity.
In the name of humanity.
We refuse.
We refuse.
To accept.
To accept.
A fascist America.
A fascist America.
In the name of humanity.
In the name of humanity.
We refuse.
We refuse.
To accept.
Except
a fascist America.
A fascist America.
That's why we say.
That's why we say.
Trump Pence.
Trump Pence.
Out now.
Out now.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back, so stay tuned. The novel coronavirus has impacted every area of the U.S. and most places around the world, but its impact on Native Americans has been especially severe. Older tribal members are particularly vulnerable, not only because of their age, but also because of the high rates of diabetes and heart disease. Many tribal communities lack clean water for proper hand washing, overcrowding in Native homes, which often includes several generations, makes social distancing impossible. And although coronavirus relief has included Native communities on paper, the money has been slow to arrive. We'll be talking about the impact on Native peoples with my next guests. All right, I'm very pleased to welcome to the show my guest, Owen Higgins. He's senior editor and staff writer for Common Dreams, and he recently did a piece that was just very compelling for me, and it was about body bags instead of requested COVID-19 testing kits for Native American clinics, seen as cruel metaphor. And the very fact that they happened was enough to get this man's back in an uproar, okay? And I'm really glad to see that. So welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Appreciate yeah. It. One of the things I wanted to ask you to start off is you quote in your article, which people can find at Common Dreams, you quote in your article that we are going to keep getting body bags instead of what we need, requested COVID-19 testing kits for Native American clinics. You were quoting Abigail Echohawk, the Seattle Indian Health Board. What was going on here? I mean, it seems like a fairly, you know, it's like, okay, they didn't get what they wanted, but there was something that was actually a lot worse than that going on.
Right. So this was, there's no reason to think that this was not an innocent mistake, honestly. So let's talk about what happened. So Seattle Indian Health Board requested PPE, personal protective equipment, and testing equipment from state, local, and federal officials. And as they were waiting for this equipment to come, they received body bags instead of the requested equipment. Now, this came from a distributor for King County Public Health Department. King County is the county that Seattle's in. And again, there's not any reason to believe that this was intentional. But the thing is that the message that it sends to a community that is, you know, has historically been incredibly mistreated by state, local, and federal governments within the United States and has a very, shall we say, like, explosive history with disease as well, you know, within this continent, for them to get body bags instead of equipment that would help them get better sent a definite message, I think, historically and in the present day, because Native American communities have been hit particularly hard by this pandemic and have not really seen levels of assistance that their suffering would lead you to believe that they would get, you know, within a, and, you know, I understand that they're certainly not the only marginalized community within the United States that is experiencing this. Within degrees, I think that a lot of different communities within the country are experiencing on one level or another some pretty fundamental neglect, especially from the federal government. But in this case, the neglect paired with the kind of the symbolism of being sent body bags instead of anything to help kind of says you're on your own here, just bury them when they die.
Well, it also seems to me, you know, because I was thinking about that as I was reading what you wrote and some other stuff on it. And this whole point about the Seattle Indian Health Board said that it was a mistake, but it was indicative of how Native people are treated. And that seemed to be really important to me because, you know, you can talk about all this. And it's and as you said, it's like it's both a reflection, I think, you know, of how people are living today, but also something that is rooted in a very heinous past in terms of how people are treated and what's happened to people. And then you're faced with this. And even though someone can say, well, it was just a mistake, there's something there that actually I think is important. And I think that's what a lot of Native peoples were pointing at, is that there's something bigger here about how Native people are viewed and how they're treated overall.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's what Brett Chapman, he's a Native American attorney that I'm friendly with online. And I asked him to kind of comment on this because he talks a lot about Native American issues. And that was one of the important things, I think, that he said to me, which was, you know, and I'm going to read his quote here from the article. Native vulnerability to coronavirus did not occur out of left field. It came about due to decades of neglect by leaders of both parties to move Native nations forward. Native American healthcare providers have always been woefully underfunded and undersupplied. This is nothing new. If I can speak for him here, I think that what Brett is really trying to get at here is that this is a longstanding problem, a bipartisan problem, and that, you know, what happened to Seattle Indian Health Board here is just a mistake, maybe, but a grotesque example of something that has been percolating for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things, I was just thinking about that as you said it, because I know one of the things that struck me in what you wrote was you talked about how the Navajo Nation is in a crisis that is a result of inaction by the U.S. government over many years and decades of neglect. Now, a lot of people have a vague sense of that, although I don't even know if even that much continues to exist with any real oomph in it, you know, but I do know that that's actually, there's a lot of truth in that statement that many years people, there's been decades of neglect, and the Navajo Nation is in a crisis that is a result of inaction by the U.S. government over these years. Let's talk about that a little.
You know, the Native Americans for centuries have been mistreated and abused by the U.S. government since before there was a U.S. when white people first landed in North America. It's been a pattern of genocide and destruction and racism and disease and all manner of land theft and murder. It's not that long ago that the U.S. government stopped the practice of taking Native children away from their families and communities and, you know, attempting to kind of like rewrite who they were by, you know, quote, civilizing, close quote, them. You know, there was a great number of Native American resistance movements in the 70s and the 80s against this, some of which ended in violence, some of which didn't. In Washington State, there was an uprising there where they occupied some land. It was a Puyallup tribe. This is the takeover of the Bureau of Indian Affairs building in D.C. in 72, taking over Tacoma's Cushman Hospital in 76. You know, so there's been a lot of political action and movement to kind of push back on this, but the fact remains that this is a history of abuse and violence, and Native American people have been horribly mistreated for centuries. And this is, again, I mean, this is kind of the crux of the article, right? Because, you know, assuming that this was a mistake, I honestly don't think that this is, that doing something like this would be so callous, cruel, and stupid. I just don't see King County Health Department doing that. But the fact that it was done by mistake indicates a certain amount of carelessness. And the fact that it happened is acting as a metaphor for for this history of mistreatment and abuse.
You know, one of the things that as you're speaking, you know, I'd really have to jump in here, because as you're speaking, you are referring to, in a lot of ways, you continue to refer to, and I think it's important, even as you're speaking about, okay, you know, you've got to figure out what's going on here. And I would say that if you look at what's happening overall in relation to Native peoples, and particularly in this case in particular, there is this sort of like, oh, you know, it's sort of like, yeah, we know you're here, but, you know, don't bug us. You know, in terms of in relation to how the system is actually relating to Native peoples. And I was thinking about this because, you know, you talk about the Navajo Nation is in a crisis and it's the result of inaction by the U.S. government over many years and decades of neglect. And I really do think that that's an important thing for people to understand, because it highlights what's happened to other tribes and Indian organizations across the country as well. You know, and I think that'd be important to talk about, because this is not something that just happens to one grouping of indigenous people. It's something that's actually, it gets concentrated someplace, but then it erupts in other places too, which is a, you know, and I think it's actually, you know, there actually is a sort of, not hidden, but sort of, you know, quietly, but pressing on with tremendous oomph, genocidal approach to what's being done to Native peoples.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to get too far over my skis and speak for Native peoples or to imply that I'm speaking from some sort of knowledge of what they've experienced. But I guess I would put it this way. I would just say that this is my feeling on it, which is that, you know, this has been a long-standing policy of neglect that applies throughout the country. And I would argue, I mean, it's definitely like that in Canada too. The treatment of the First People up there is also absolutely horrendous. The Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has betrayed a lot of the things that he said that he would do, especially having to do with the pipeline. I mean, I really think that when it comes to the treatment of the indigenous peoples of North America, it doesn't really matter if your leader is a grotesque buffoon or a slick, good-looking liberal. It's going to be relatively the same. And in both cases, they're just acting in continuation of longstanding policy, which is a sort of genocidal neglect. And I agree with you on that term, because I think that people should really understand that ignoring and neglecting these communities when it comes to their survival, their health, and their place within and without the country, you know, taking those actions is kind of like, it feels to me, again, from the outside looking in, but it feels to me as if, you know, it's just this kind of like slow choking out of a people by ignoring them and just leaving them with less and less and less to die, basically. And in this case, it being, you know, the issue being the coronavirus crisis is maybe making that like a more stark reality and example to those of us who are not Native, who are observing it. But I definitely think that you're right, that this is just a continuation of a longstanding policy and behavior across the entire country toward Native people.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking with Owen Higgins, senior editor of Common Dreams, talking about the impact of COVID-19 on Native peoples. You know, one of the things that actually struck me too is, and you've been speaking to this, but it's just really striking when you think about what is happening. The character of the oppression that's being brought down against Native peoples, and then two, this whole question of, you know, when money becomes this sort of this tool that can be used to sort of make people behave one way or another. That's one of the things that they're trying to do, and how they keep this, they keep the money. And even if they say, well, it was a mistake, like they say money was withheld and there's a crying need for money and resources to actually be able to mount the kind of medical care even that's needed in the face of desperate and dying people, which is what's happening to people in that area. Native peoples are desperate and they're dying, and the question of money and where it's going to go suddenly became a sort of a tug of war between, in a certain sense, a tug of war, and it didn't last forever because I think it was probably they realized that there was going to be a certain amount of pressure hit on them. But the tug of war that was really saying, yeah, you think, you know, I don't think we're going to give you all this, and people dying as they're playing with whether or not money is going to be just given out among the people.
Yeah, yeah, you know, I was noticing somebody posted this online. This is a Mark Twain quote, where he says there were two reigns of terror, if we would but remember it and consider it, the one wrought murder and hot passion, the other in heartless cold blood. The one lasted mere months, the other lasted 1,000 years. The one inflicted death upon 10,000 persons, the other upon 100 millions. And I think that that's what you're talking about with the money is really interesting, because it's this kind of like subtle and silent, horrendous violence that's being visited on people by cutting them off from having resources, or in this case, you know, the mode of exchange to get resources, and is using this sort of economic violence to cause even more pain. And again, I mean, while we are, of course, talking about this particular crisis at this particular moment, what this crisis is simply doing is just exposing these issues that remain significant problems within the way that we've kind of set up our economy and society. And right now we're talking about money and healthcare, but I think that it's kind of an interesting way to look at it, where it's just kind of part of this ongoing cold-blooded terror, as Twain would put it.
Mm-hmm. Now, one more question. You know, we've been talking about this widespread Native people's crisis across the country. Let's talk about what's happening in particular in relation to basically the kind of poison that people are facing, and especially Native peoples across the country, the kind of poison that they're facing in terms of even their ability to stand up and to get the proper medical care, to be treated like a human being, and being able to actually fight to live as opposed to sort of suffering in a corner somewhere. So let's talk about that a little.
Sure. Just to clarify, what do you mean by poison?
What I'm talking about is not literal poison. People are in the midst of a major crisis, and it's happening across the country. And it's happening now. And one place that we see it is the people in the northern end of the country, and we see what's going on there around Seattle and all this other stuff. But then there's all these other things. There's all these other groupings of people who are being confronted with the same thing across the country. And it seems like it's this widespread Native people's crisis that's going on, and it's happening right now. And, you know, in the face of a disease, in the face of a threat, an actual threat on your ability to live, that becomes even more pressing, I think. And it actually puts a question before people. One, you can either ignore this and say, well, you know, there's not much we can do about it. Let them take care of their own. They got all these things that we gave them over the years or something. And or you could actually recognize the assault on basic humanity and the humanity of the Native peoples, but also humanity that everyone should be paying attention to in themselves, you know, because it paints a certain picture of humanity and what should be done. And this is not a good picture that exists now.
No, I mean, it's definitely like heightening the contradictions, right? You know, I think that I just think that looking at it as the virus exposing the mistreatment and the attacks on Native people that have been going on for decades, centuries, is just really just making this a really stark example of the horrors of the American project as they're being visited on its victims. And, you know, I wouldn't want to speak to the experience of individual tribes or people, but I think that it's definitely undeniable that the way the U.S. government has treated the indigenous people on this land has been, as you say, just poison for many, many years. And this disease is just, you know, the latest example of a genocidal project to continue kind of one of the founding principles of this country.
All right, Owen, I want to thank you very much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Okay, talk to you again, man. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. That was Owen Higgins, senior editor of Common Dreams, talking about the impact of COVID-19 on Native peoples. And this brings us to the end of yet another show. I want to thank my assistant producer, Henry Carson, my production assistant, Jeff Pryor, and all of you for tuning in. If you want to write to me, you can at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Thank you.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. But just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long judgment day, so won't you make them happy before they pass away. Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. Just let it be. Na, 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me.